Okay, good morning everybody. This morning's topic is Muqtada Mahmud Special Case, which is the second category of Muqtada that we wanted to talk about. But before that, I'd like to go back on something we spoke about last week. I'd like to thank Mrs. Uri for telling her husband what I spoke about, and he opened my eyes to an interesting discussion. I'd like to share it with you. And that is, we spoke about electronic appliances. Or electric appliances. Electric appliances, because one the way of usage of the appliances is to turn them on and turn them off on Shabbos, which is Asur. So therefore, we say that they are kli shemnachta le'isur because their primary purpose is to use them, and the usage of them on Shabbos is forbidden. However, I pointed out that electrical appliances that produce heat is more of a problem because you can have a element inside that glows. When you have an element inside that glows, so then you have fire. And when you have fire, then you have to treat it like a candle. A candle itself is not a kli shemnachta le'isur. It's isur itself. And isur itself is different. It's muqtada mahmas isur. It's not a kli shemnachta le'isur. It's not a utensil that's used for an isur, but it itself is also. It's a discussion how to understand what a candle is. Is it a flame? Is it a candle? What is a flame? But let's take it as fact that when you've got a fire, fire is mukta. Not a question of causing mukta or called a kli shemnachta le'isur. It is mukta. And therefore I said that a heat producing electrical appliance would be proper mukta and you can't move it at all. So Dr. Uri pointed out to me that not every heat-producing appliance has an element that glows, and one would have to know. So I looked into it, and I still haven't got a final conclusion as to what the actual facts on the ground are. But what he notified me was that an oil radiator, a radiator that they have, an electrical radiator they use for heating that is filled with oil, and there's an element inside that heats the oil. The oil then heats the metal fins, and because they have lots of surface area, so you have convection, and that causes the heat to go into the room. So the oil never reaches more than 300 degrees. And the question is, how hot does the element get? And he pointed out to me that the element probably does not get more than about 15 or 20 degrees warmer than the oil, because there's always a heat transfer from the element into the liquid, and the liquid into the metal, and since the liquid doesn't go beyond 300 degrees, so probably the element does not go more than 300 and something. And I looked up that most elements are made of a material that glows at 430 degrees, 450 degrees, so it probably does not reach that heat, and therefore it could be that it doesn't even glow. Now, I did a little bit more looking around in the various svarim, and I saw that Rav Neuwirth is actually quite particular. I didn't pay attention properly last week. And he says that in those heaters where the element glows, and he leaves the radiator out, he leaves the radiator included in those items that don't have a glowing element, and therefore I stand corrected, that according to Rav Neuwirth, a radiator is not Muqtada Mahmas Isur, but rather it's just a kli shemnachta le'isur. Rabbi Reuben says that he heard from an engineer that actually the way an element works is an element is a metal wire where you pass current through it, and because of the resistance, it produces heat. They use a material that has very high resistance, therefore is prone to produce an enormous amount of heat very quickly and easily. And because it's metal, so if you immerse it into a liquid, you're going to get a current short. So you have a metal element that is insulated by magnesium oxide, and then around that they put a steel casing. So when you see an element like an immersion element that you would put into a cup to make a cup of hot water, or what you would have at the bottom of your kettle, or even that you have on those who remember the old stoves that had an element a spiral element that you put your pot on, you're not actually seeing the element. You're seeing the outside metal layer. And or even what you have in your oven, it's the same type of thing. Inside is the filament, because surrounded by an insulation, and then the metal on the outside. So he said that the fact that the metal on the outside doesn't glow is not a riot to what's happening on the inside. But strictly speaking, it could be that there's not that much heat lost through the insulation, and therefore there is a fair transfer of heat from the filament to the element to the liquid, and therefore if the liquid doesn't get to at least close to 400 degrees, then probably the element doesn't get that far and therefore doesn't glow. So Rabbi Reuben says no. He says that he heard from an engineer that it does glow. Now I'll take it one step further, and I saw that Rav Moshe Feinstein holds that although there's many opinions that hold that a glowing filament or glowing element is considered fire, and in fact in Hilchos Shabbos we do say that heating a metal till it glows is considered as mavir. Says in this particular case, this is the way it's used. It's made to be used like that, and therefore it retains its status as a kli and doesn't change to the status of esh. And therefore, Rav Moshe Feinstein holds that all metal elements that glow, all electronic or electric appliances that have an element inside that it was made to work that way, does not get a din of esh, and therefore is not mukta because of Isur, but rather it's just a regular klishim after Isur. He does say that in an incandescent bulb, that means the old electrical light bulbs that we have that have a filament inside that glows, he says, as a precaution, we should treat it as fire because that's how people see it. But Me'ika Hadin, he wants to hold that that's also considered a kli and not considered esh. So, I see that the most of the Pasuk, Rabbi Yashi, Karelitz, and many others do not follow Rav Moshe Feinstein's logic on that particular point, but Yizicha can add it as a tziruch, and therefore to find a heter to move a oil radiator that has a element inside that until we know otherwise in the Chua Oira, I would say it does not glow, according to what I said last week, is incorrect, is treated as pure mukta, but rather one can treat it as klishim nachal isur. I did say that my cousin asked Rabbi Kornfeld about this many years ago, and he told him that you'll find heterim, but I absolutely at least now understand what he means by you'll find heterim, because you have to know for sure that the element is glowing, and Rav Moshe Feinstein holds that it's klishim nachal isur. So I just thought I'd come back to that point and bring that up. Now we'll move on to Mukta Machmas Cheshon Kis. So that was the next, that was another one of the guidelines of Mukta, one of the rules of Mukta. We'll see there's, call it three different categories, three different types of items that will fall into this rule of Cheshon Kis. Cheshon Kis, literally translated, is a loss of your pocket, meaning a loss of your money. When something is valuable and you're worried about it being damaged, so that is what we call muksa machmas chesun kis, that you're afraid that it's something is going to be damaged and you therefore are much more careful on the way you use it. Therefore, the item that you have is designated for a single use and it's not considered a multiple purpose. Until now, when we spoke about a klishim nachal isur, we said that it's primary uses for Isur, but it does have secondary uses, it does have other uses. But when it has an only use, and there's a reason why it has an only use, there are opinions that hold that you could deal with this type of muksa even nowadays with cheap items, because we are so spoiled and have so many gadgets and utensils around our home that there's certain things that we just don't use for other things, some say. But essentially we're not going to deal with that. That those items, since they have one use or one use only, should be machmas cheshon kis. The choira, we're going to say no. That's, it's got to be that you've makpid, not to use it for something else. So if you have a pen that's worth a shekel or two, the fact that you only use it for writing and don't use it for anything else is just a fact. It's not a reason to say that you're makpid and therefore you're afraid it's going to get damaged. So number one, we'll say something which is expensive, and its purpose is to use it for something that's also, because not automatically just because it's expensive is mukta. Your diamond ring is not mukta. But something that's expensive and its use is for something which is asur, and the owner is makbe, particular, not to use it for anything else other than its purpose, that is a typical case of mukta machas and kis. And we'll give an example. Certain knives, the knives of a professional, but he will not use them for anything else. A charchet moyo has a miller knife, shkita knife. A butcher has a special knife. He will use it only in his butchery and use it for cutting in the way that it's intended for, or a chef's knife or something like that. You don't use your vegetable knife with your meat, and you don't use your meat knife to go fix your puncture on your bicycle. Expensive candlesticks, no one's going to use them as a baseball bat. If you have material that you want to sew with, so you're not going to use it, you have a spill on the floor. Oh, I have fresh material that I just bought yesterday. Let me go use, clean up the spill, and I'll put it through the washing machine and sew my dress later. We're not going to do that. We say to the person, even though it's not in the same range of expense as the items you mentioned above, but still, you went and spent money on a new piece of cloth. A person is mucked not to use that cloth for anything else. A computer is an example of something that has a one-purpose use. Is the use of ISO that you use it for what it is, nothing else. You don't use your laptop as a paperweight, a camera, or any other appliance which is sensitive and you will be careful on its use. You wouldn't use it for anything else. Writing paper, which is expensive, to mean that it's gold-lined, diamond-studded. It just means that it's more than the regular paper, and therefore you treat it differently. You don't use it to write notes to the teacher that your kid came late for school. That this is more expensive writing paper that you keep for special occasions. Again, you're not going to fold it into a paper airplane or something like that. Then that makes it something that you might be done to use it for its use. Or parchment that a cipher has in his house. He's not going to give it to his kids to scribble on. You see that it's much better to have it for its particular use. So these are examples of things that, because of their price, now it doesn't have to mean that it's a 4 or 7 or 8-digit price. It means relative to items that are like it, it is more expensive. Writing paper is more expensive than plain paper. Or fresh material is more expensive than reused material. So we're not comparing a set of silver candlesticks to a writing paper. We're just saying, relative to its class of item, this is something that is on the expensive side. Therefore, a person's behavior is that he's makbid not to use it for anything else. As a result, it gets a din of muktzeh machas kesef kis. What is the status of this type of muktzeh? It is totally muktzeh, meaning no moving it at all, not for any excuse, not like what we said last week and before, the gabi. Klishim nachal iso. Klishim nachal iso is the one exception that you're allowed to move it tzarek gufo, tzarek makoima, if you need it in its place. But machmas chesron kis, even for tzarek gufo or tzarek makoima, you cannot move it at all. We will discuss later, once we finish the different categories, the various exceptions of moving mukta in cases of danger or kila hayad, hiltim and atzad. That will be a separate shiur in itself on generally, how can muktzeh be moved in exceptional circumstances? Some more examples of muktzeh machmas chesron kis would be accounting paper, invoices, receipts, contracts, agreements, checks, money, paper money, credit cards, stocks and bonds, receipts that you keep for tax purposes. Essentially, it doesn't mean any type of invoice becomes automatically muktzeh machmas chesron kis, but rather something where it has value. You don't give it to your kids to draw on it because you actually need it, because you need to send it to your accountant to file it in as part of your expenses or get a tax rebate on it, whatever the case may be. You keep a receipt of an item you bought so that you can have the guarantee. Anything where you're makbid on it, you're going to put it away, you're going to file it away, or you should be filing this right now, haven't, but those type of paperwork that you have reason to store and not to discard, then the fact that you want to keep it, so you're keeping it for that and not for anything else. So to a stamp that is unmarked that can still be used, is also, it's set aside for using, and you're not going to give it to your kids to add to their sticker collection, or a bus ticket in the days when we still had tickets, but the same thing would be a Rav-Kav. You don't use it as a toy, you keep it for its use because it has value to you. All these are considered as muktzeh machmas chesron kis. So the first case usually has to do with the value. The second case has to do with because you particular to keep it because it means something to you, even if it's not that expensive. An invoice is very cheap to print, but it means something to you, you need it. And now we're going to talk about a third case, is something where you have set it aside because of future need. For example, anything that you keep in a store to trade with. Someone who owns a store, the items in the store, even if generally in a, if they are found in a household, they are not mukta whatsoever, but in his, since they're in his store, they are not made for the regular usage right now, they're made to sell. Selling is something you can't do on Shabbos. So if you're selling clothing, even though clothing is not mukta on Shabbos, or you're selling pots and pans and dishes, and that is something which is not mukta on Shabbos, well, pots and pans could be, but dishes is not, not mukta. So here we say that the owner of the store is makbid. Never going to, someone who owns a clothing shop, and his, and one of his children comes to him and says, Daddy, I have nothing to wear. He says, oh, well, go take a dress from one of the racks, Moshe Shabbos, put it back again. That's not the way shopkeepers treat their merchandise, or at least we hope so. And therefore, that is makbid that no one should use it out of the appropriate use so that it can be sold properly. Therefore, it is considered as mukta. And basically, we'll say that anything which he won't take for his own use, in other words, of course, if the neighbor comes and says, can I borrow a dress? He'll say no. But even if his own kids say, Dad, can I have a dress for the day? He's going to say no, because that's his business. If he says yes, that means he's taking it out of circulation. That dress is not going to put back on the rack to be sold again. So long as it's on the rack, it's muktzeh machmas k'tzaron kis. And even though sometimes it will happen that one of his kids will say, you know, I need a dress, and you say, go take one from the shop. Then, when they take it, it becomes a regular dress, it becomes ois muktzeh. But if they take it on Shabbos, then they can't. Because when Shabbos came in, it was still hanging on the hanger to be sold, and it's muktzeh machmas k'tzaron kis. The fact that they change their mind on Shabbos doesn't help. But if they change their mind on Friday, would it help? What's interesting is an exception to this rule of the items that are for resale, and therefore they are not, as of now, set aside for use, but rather for trading, and therefore they're considered as mukta. An exception to this rule would be food. Food, we say that a person never takes his mind off food. Food can always be eaten on Shabbos, and therefore food never becomes mukta. We'll talk about a few exceptions, but generally speaking, food doesn't become mukta. Ad kerekah. If you have a grain of wheat that you put into the ground so that it should take root and grow into a new wheat stalk, we paskin that so long as the wheat hasn't taken root, you can actually remove it from the ground if you want to eat. However, a person is going to eat wheat. In the old days, it's called mashmah that they sometimes chewed on the actual kernels. But the point is that something edible that's put into the ground, and if you could remove it from the ground, it obviously the earth is mukta, the soil is mukta, so be careful how you move it out, you do not that or something like that. If you can remove it and you know that it has not taken root, therefore there's no isur of koitzer or something like that, so then we say mukta it's not. Even though this is the typical case of a person discarding something. Part of the idea of mukta is that I have taken it out of my mind for Shabbos usage because it belongs in the shop, it belongs somewhere else, it's only made for isur. So if I take food and I stick it in the ground, true, I'm sticking it there because I wanted to germinate and turn into a plant, but lechora, that's the furthest from your mind of eating it. Nevertheless, food, as long as it's edible, doesn't become mukta, is the general rule. So we'll say the same thing if a person has food in his shop, even though he wants to sell it, but at the back of his mind there's always that possibility that, oh, we forgot to take out some fruit for dessert, we want to make a fruit salad, so go into the shop and bring a couple of fruit for fruit salad. We're going to say that is mutter on Shabbos. Those fruit are not considered as mukta because the owner wants to sell them. Nevertheless, it's food. Food is different. So I'll bring an example, an exception soon. This case here is, so the same thing would apply when it comes to items in a shop, for example, things that are klishim after leheter, and they're not expensive, and therefore if they were in your home, you would consider them to be non-mukta, but because they're in the store and they're to be resold, and you wouldn't take them home to use and put them back in the store, that makes it has been mukta machas chesem kis. So if you have, a plate is a good example, something that you eat, an eating utensil, that generally if it's in your home and it's not mukta whatsoever, and it's not an expensive plate, it's something cheap, pack of plastic plates for example, that in your own home is not mukta. When they're in the store, they're mukta, because you're not going to take them home, use them, and put them back again, therefore they're set aside for sfoira. But interesting, if a person has a gemach in his home, and the items are to be lent out. So then, even though you don't keep it for your own use, the cups and plates that I have in my house are not for my personal use, or you have tablecloths or tables, chairs, or whatever it is, I'm not going to use it for my own use because I want them to stay clean and ready for someone else's use. But they set aside for use in Shabbos, for mutter use in Shabbos, then we'll say that they are not mukta, even though it appears to be in the same circumstance that they're there for trading, but this is not considered trading. This is that they made to be lent out and come back after they've been used. Therefore, those things are not mukta, even if you have the form of a gemach where you charge a fee, whether nominal or not is irrelevant. Nevertheless, we'll say that, of course, you're not going to make a sign a contract on Shabbos. You're not going to discuss the payment on Shabbos, but if a person takes your gemach items and has to pay for them afterwards, that would not change the status of mukta of the item, and they remain non-mukta and can be lent out on Shabbos as well. And in another interesting example, we mentioned that a stamp. So we spoke about a stamp that was not marked, so that person's going to keep it for usage. But a stamp that has been postmarked already, so it's a used stamp, so then it all depends on what purpose it has in your house. If it's something that gets played around with, it's going to be used in the sticker album, fine. But if you are a stamp collector and you know that this one actually has value, careful with it, you don't pile it away in your album and your stamp collection. So then in Hanami, it becomes mukta, it is considered mukta. So it depends on your attitude towards a stamp. A stamp that is not, has not been marked, but for whatever reason you have no interest in using it, say it's an old denomination, has no value, and now you prepare to give it to your kids to play with and stick in the sticker album, so then it would not be mukta machsorinkis on Shabbos if you have already discarded it from use before Shabbos. Now here's an example of something which we said food does not become mukta. Here's one example of something which appears to be food and is mukta, is an esrog. An esrog is something that a dealer holds very dear to him, to himself. Of course, every owner of an esrog during Yom Tov holds it to be very dear because it now gives him opportunity to do a mitzvah. But even the dealer sees it as an opportunity to sell. And it is a very sensitive object. You don't want to drop that esrog. You don't want to get a scratch or a bruise or a cut. As zichur not to have the pitum fall off, and therefore esrogim before Yom Tov are considered as mukta so long as they are owned by the traders, the wholesaler and the retailer. Once it gets into the private hands, so then there's a discussion whether lechor it's not mukta until Yom Tov, and Yom Tov is a separate idea that has been set aside for mitzvah, and therefore you're not allowed to eat. It could be that you are allowed to pick it up to smell. That's actually a separate discussion, but it wouldn't be a question of Chesaron Kis. It's a question of Mukta Machmas Mitzvah. But as Chesaron Kis, an Esrog before Yom Tov, when it's still in the hands of the dealer, is an example of an exception to what we said above, is that food kaka can become Mukta. Another example, okay, we'll get to that in a moment. Something which has a fixed place, and you're careful not to remove it from its place because you're afraid it's going to break. It actually is worth something, would also be Moksim Machmas Tesoro Kis. An example would be a wall clock that you don't take it down, you don't want it to drop, or a painting that is of value. Not, excuse me for not insulting anybody, but your children's creations that hang on your fridge, even though they're there for from whenever they hang up until Erev Pesach, so that's quite permanent. Nevertheless, I imagine they're not considered Muktzimach Kesaron Kis, unless the Kesaron Kis here is the tantrum that might come out if it gets removed. But otherwise, generally speaking, we're talking about works of slightly more famous artists that are hanging on your wall at home. We will say that is considered as Mukta. Another interesting example is a closet, a cupboard that you have, if it is so large that you're afraid to move it because it will break through moving, so then that also shows that you might be not to move it. So then begins the din of Muktzimach Kesaron Kis. Therefore, for some reason, something fell behind it and now you're desperate to move it. One can't move it on Shabbos because we say that generally you might be. How can you open such a closet? So that's a separate story. We treat it like just like you can open your front door because your front door is bottled to the house and therefore cannot get it in of mukta, and therefore the closet, because of its size, we say gets it in of mechuv lekarka, and therefore the doors are bottled to the cupboard, and therefore don't get it in the book. So actually moving the whole cupboard would be asur. V'yesh omrim, that this applies to a fridge as well. I have my reservations on that, because today's fridges have wheels, and they're made that you can move them without damaging them. So I'm not sure how much people are makbid not to move their fridges. If taka, you makbid not to move your fridge, you're afraid you will damage it, then in the Hanami, you should treat your fridge also as something that is in a fixed place and you're makbid to keep it. Tzitzis. If you have tzitzis that is connected, that is not yet connected not to a beged, it is still loose strands. So we say that you're makbid to use it only for that. You're not going to now tie these little strings together as a skipping rope for your kids. No, you're going to keep them for tzitzis, making nothing on Shabbos, and therefore it's asur, and therefore these tzitzis are considered as muktzah kasum kis, so long as they have not been put onto a beged. Which means that if your husband bought himself a new set of tzitzis to put onto his talis, and he hasn't got around to doing it, procrastinates like that, set it in the mirror, and he leaves it lying on the dining room table, you can't take it off, because there's no heth of tzoko from a kaimoi, because it's muktzah kasum kis. Tzitzis that have come off a beged, they have been worn out, and now you want to replace them with new ones, and you've discarded them, which we said is mutter to do, as long as you do it in a way that is not considered as design derogatory, so you could wrap them up, put them in a bag, and then you can throw them out. So then we say that it depends on what your purpose is. if they're headed for the garbage and they have no purpose on Shabbos, and if you should treat them as mukta, not because of chesaron kis, but because they're a useless item, treat them as eitzim v'avonim, meaning like just something that has been discarded. Any garbage is considered mukta, and therefore this, although to call it garbage is not nice, but it's something that's going to be thrown out, it's something that has no use anymore in your house, so therefore it's considered discarded, and therefore will be mukta. If you have a use for them, for example, people sometimes use old tzitzis as a bookmark, then it has a use, and therefore will be not booked. So we're running out of time. I'm going to finish everything. So I'll mention one other thing. We spoke about food not being mukta. We mentioned an esrog, because so there's one other food item that could be mukta, and that is a matzah. How can a matzah be mukta? Well, if you have Erev Pesach that falls out on Shabbos. So you've got a very interesting situation over here. On the one hand, it's Erev Pesach, and Erev Pesach we know how to eat matzahs. Therefore, this food is also to eat. So it's not available as food for me. But maybe I can give it to an animal. It's still edible. My animals can eat it. So we'll say that true. Since it's still edible for animals, and the fact that I'm not eating it for a separate reason called an isur, essentially I would say that it's not considered mukta. But the matzah that you've set aside for the seder, called the matzah mitzvah, you're not going to give them to an animal. You want to make sure that they're looked after, they don't crack, they don't make shlemus. Those matzahs, it's all brought down, we would treat them as mukta matzahs kesar and kis on Erev Yom. It's a very interesting case of food that actually gets a dream of mukta. Okay, there's still quite a few more examples. We're not going to fit them in the last minute that we have, and therefore I'm going to end it over here. We'll continue next week and hopefully move on to the next category as well. To wish everybody a good week and a week of Surah Tovas, and everything should be well with Gladys.
Amen. Amen.
Thank you.
Thank you.